The following broadcast of Sioux Valley Voice was recorded earlier. You will not be able to call in during the next hour. You can listen to past episodes of Sioux Valley Voice online anytime at ktna.org. You're listening to KTNA 88.9 FM Talkeetna, streaming from ktna.org. This is Sioux Valley Voice. I'm Philip Manning. This week on the program, we have Mat-Su Borough Assemblymember Randall Kowalki. We'll be discussing issues facing the borough and the Upper Valley. To join the conversation, you can give us a call at 733-1200 or send us an email, dj@ktna.org. Assemblymember Kowalki, thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
So, I know I had somewhat of a late evening last night following the assembly meeting. I'm sure yours was all the more later because you had to drive from Palmer back to Willow last night. So,
I think I checked in the house about 11:30 last night, so it was a long day.
But there was a lot going on at last night's meeting, so I want to start with a bit of a recap of that. So one thing that didn't end up going through but took up a large proportion of the meeting last night was a proposed gravel tax from Assemblymember Mayfield.
Yes, that was a kind of a moving target. He had originally proposed that as a RSA funding method. Amendments were made to change it. There were a number of problems that myself and others perceived in that the unit of measurement was not nailed down. We were talking about yards and tons. Mm-hmm. Notwithstanding what Google might say, there isn't a direct calculation unless you define the type of material that you're using, somewhere ranging in the rock product area from 1.2 tons per yard to like 1.6. And mm-hmm. so this was kind of chaotic. And then there was what I perceived to be the additional expense to the small operators and the fact that 6-7 years ago the state abandoned it because it wasn't didn't make economic sense.
Right. But so, like I said, that took up a big portion of the meeting. And I think it also kind of speaks to something that's going to be coming up in the near future, at least if the mayor has his way, and because he and I spoke after one of the borough budget meetings, and he was saying that, you know, at this point with the Mat-Su Borough at the tax cap or the revenue cap, that other avenues of revenue have to start being explored. And Mayor Halter mentioned specifically to me after a borough budget meeting sales tax, and that might be a borough-wide sales tax might be a thing at some point.
Well, he would certainly have to find the votes for it, and,
right.
and we haven't—you know—we haven't had a lot of conversation, and I have a great deal of respect for the mayor. What we are further handicapped with is what's Juneau going to do,
right?
And if Juneau were to have decided, or decides in the near future, to lay a 3-4% sales tax in over the state, and we start layering this stuff. So I think that's probably been one of the things why Vern's been, you know, reluctant to have conversation with the assembly about it. And then, of course, during the discussion of diversifying, I know Assemblymember Sykes, this is the second time he's brought it up at the assembly meeting, opening up the senior exemption and doing away with parts of that. So I think that's going to be rather controversial. But
right.
We are facing tough times, and it's kind of an all downhill thing. It ends up at the local level.
Right. Well, and I heard Assemblymember Sykes bring that up again last night, and you're right. He has brought it up multiple times at this point. And the point he raises is that, you know, a few years ago, it was before you were on the assembly, you know, that the amount of exemptable property got raised significantly. It used to be, it was still in six figures, but I think it was like 170,000, and now it's over 200,000.
218, I believe.
Yeah. And so that made a bigger impact, I think, on borough revenue than was perhaps anticipated. And then now, you know, we do have an aging population in the Mat-Su Borough and in all of Alaska. And so, no, I think he's right when he says that it's going to impact the borough's funding going forward more and more. What to do about it is a separate question, of course, but
Well, one of the, I think, important things to consider is that, and I've been here on and off, I've been out of state a couple of different times, but since 1975, and we couldn't keep any seniors here. Mm. The deal was that Charlie retired, Charlie's gone, Mary retired, Mary's gone. And we have an expanding senior citizen population, partly because they can afford Alaska better, and they're also usually a minimal of service users. Mm. Most of the time, we don't have grandparents with kids in school.
Sure.
And all of the other services, and their income is frequently transfer payments. So it's pensions, it's Social Security, other money coming in, which really benefits a local community, particularly in an otherwise economic downturn. So that's going to be the tension in that next discussion.
Okay. So to continue on, kind of recapping a bit last night's meeting, one of the first things that happened, because it got moved way up the agenda, was the mayor's veto of some extra funding from the school site selection fund that was going to be put toward classroom funding for schools. And there was a motion to override that veto, which requires 5 votes, and the override got 4 votes. And you were one of the no votes on the override. So I want to give you an opportunity to explain your reasoning and kind of how you came to that decision. Because you and I talked before we got on air about it. But so what happened with that veto and with the extra school funding, and why did you vote the way you did?
Well, first of all, during the initial vote, I hit the wrong button. So that created—
I do remember that.
That created some chaos and confusion. I think it was the first time that's happened to me. There were a number of things, and your opening remark about the money being for the classroom would have made a real difference to me. Mm. And it isn't necessarily for the classroom. The school district receives a check, and the school board— and the administration decides where that money is spent. So there were a couple things going on, one of which is I'm in the possession of 3 documents, all claiming to be audited numbers for the year 2015, that claim the school district got $208 million, $210 million, and $248 million from the borough. So that came up during the discussion when this money was originally being allocated. Never got any clear answers to what that problem was. I introduced an amendment for a discussion. Ultimately, as you know, I voted against it. But we had a number of questions. That $40 million was one of them. And I wanted to understand where more of this money was going, how it was being allocated, because during the budget hearing sessions that we had throughout the district, it was a really highly, in my opinion, orchestrated, organized lobbying effort. Teachers, students showed up, and I believe at various hearings, everything but breathing in the classroom was going to be cut. And, of course, our original funding was flat from last year, but that included the 3% they asked for, an additional 3% that they were given. And I couldn't understand how that would result in all of these layoffs and the apocalypse that was going on. So I asked that the 3% be returned to open up a dialogue on what was going on. I ultimately voted against that. We were on our way to the flat funding, and Assemblyman Mayfield made the motion to essentially wipe out the piggy bank. He twice during the assembly meeting said that all the land that was needed for where the schools were going to be was available. And the morning after the first time he said that, I got a call from the land folks who said that's not accurate. That's not the official borough position. And he stated that again last night. While we were debating, my item for debate over at the school district headquarters, they were looking down the sites to save $1.5 million this year, $2.2 next year by outsourcing. And I won't get in a discussion because I don't know whether that's good or bad, but if things were as dire as they claim they are, and I was over at the assembly moving to take $1.5 million away from the school district, and they were in a position that night to put $1.5 million back in the coffers and they didn't do it. Hmm. So there's more than a few questions I still have about that. Ultimately, we write the check. The school board decides what gets cut.
So, I mean, it kind of sounds like what you're saying is that you believe there are efficiencies that the school district could undertake without necessarily cutting funding directly to the classroom.
Exactly.
Okay. So, the mayor's veto got upheld. So the school district has flat funding, which I believe is $55.8 million, if memory serves.
Yeah, 55 and change. Yeah.
Yeah. The amendment that Assemblymember Mayfield made was to empty out the school site selection fund. And that would have resulted in not quite $2 million more, like I think $1.5 million is what it ended up at, that would have gone to the school district as well. So with that, so now that's gone. But I mean, you raised some interesting points, and you raised some of them at the meeting last night, where there is this potential for a lot of unaccounted for money.
Yes, and I'm not making any accusations of accusing anybody, but I have enough business background when I'm looking at three sets of numbers that all claim to be audited, and they're talking about the
and
same
they're all
subject,
different.
And they're all different. It's a problem. Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, if you want to join the conversation today, the number to call is 733-1200, or you can send us an email, dj@ktna.org. So, of course, school funding is one of those things that it's a very complex issue, right? Because for the last few years, the borough assembly has, you know, granted the Mat-Su Borough School District the increases in funding they've asked for. The Mat-Su Borough, when compared to the other big five school districts, is lower in terms of the local contribution to education. But at the same time, at this point at least, the Mat-Su Borough is also at its revenue cap. And I'm not sure that those other four boroughs have that revenue cap. So because it's going to be relevant to a lot of what we're going to talk about through the rest of the show today, can you kind of walk me through what does the revenue cap mean? It's also commonly referred to as the tax cap, but what sort of implication does that have on what the Mat-Su Borough can do going forward?
Well, yeah, running back just a second,
sure.
If I get to write the script, I get to pick the facts. So I think this is kind of one of those cases. We were underfunding compared to the big five, and what a terrible bunch we were for doing that. As we dug into it, the $17 million at Fairbanks got from military impact money. So
is that federal money?
That's federal money. So you slide that over to the side, and you start dancing back through that. And again, the manager last night, I think, reported on that based on our property tax, we're one of the highest percentage boroughs in paying. So, he's getting to choose those facts. So that's kind of out there. But
sure.
But the tax cap, revenue cap, was something that was voted into place some time ago. We were at 9.98, I believe, going in.
For a few years, as I recall,
well,
right
yeah,
under
we'd
10.
Been, we'd been pretty flat, and for the few year thing, I'd also, yes, you're correct, in the school district had been getting their 3% for every year for 4 or 5 years prior to this last year when they got 6. So what we are able to do is to tax to a limit, and that limit is calculated based on Anchorage CPI and some other smoke and mirrors.
Population growth.
Yeah, population growth, and I don't mean smoke and mirrors, but they're not real numbers, but it's kind of an arcane thing as far as I was concerned. Anyway, that's put together. Well, that resulted in us having a maximum tax cap of 10.3332. With the manager put forward, we're at 10.14 plus the revenue bonds, which were, or the recreation bonds, which were passed, puts us at 10.32. So we're there. Assembly has within their power to do away with the tax cap. There are other things that can happen. I don't expect that to happen any more than I do the senior exemption issue.
Right.
But that's kind of what we have to deal with.
And so, I mean, that really does, that seems like that puts a pretty hard ceiling on where, on how much borough spending there can be, especially if there's not going to be a lot of momentum to change that. And so education, the school district takes up a big proportion of the borough's operating budget every year. And so if there's a cap on that, and you brought up multiple times, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to explain it here, is that, you know, the school district's funding was held flat. Meanwhile, the actual borough's budget, the operating budget got dinged by a fair bit, and then the capital budget took at least a $5 million hit, I think six, if I'm not mistaken. So if you can kind of go into how that worked, so that how the manager kind of made that, to quote a former president, the voodoo economics work.
Yeah, it was cuts essentially across. Our operating budget now is less than the school district's. They were, you know, at what their number was, we were $7 million less, and I don't have the PowerPoint that John put in front of me, but in round numbers, that was the way that worked out. Capital projects was greatly reduced. Our budget was, I think, $7 million less than last year, plus or minus a bit on that front. One of the things that was continually, that I did bring up, and I'm sure you heard me mention it, was one of our mandates, in addition to education, is health and safety. And Department of Emergency Services, which are your ambulance folks, took what ultimately ended up being a 7.22 decrease. It had been more. There was an error in the budget.
It was 8.5 at some point,
eight
as I recall.
It was 8.25.
Yeah, okay.
And then the reality was, but what seems to be happening there is that the borough's tightening their budget. DES is figuring out a way to do more with less. And then the other folks were demanding increases. And I was here in 86 and watched people turn in their house keys and lose their jobs, and they didn't get their automatic step increases. They got laid off. And not that I'm suggesting that's a good thing, but I would like to see some cooperative effort in working through this, not just give us more money.
Right. So the big thing last night, at least speaking from a Talkeetna perspective, is that, you know, a couple of weeks ago you proposed a 3% sales tax for the Talkeetna Sewer and Water District. And last night the assembly approved putting that on the ballot. And so we're going to talk a fair bit about that over the course of the next probably at least half hour or so. But I want to start at the very beginning here and let you kind of lay out the case for why you introduced the proposition of a sales tax and kind of where, not only where that came from, but what your vision for what it would do is.
In the beginning.
I know, believe me.
Well, I believe Mr. Cooperton, Vern Halter, and of course, when I was a candidate and I ran for essentially a year because I wasn't that well known, I was being asked on a daily basis why we couldn't get the bed tax money to help with the water and sewer. It's the tourists who are causing this. I met with Senator Dunleavy on a couple of occasions. He said, yes, that would require a change in Juneau. I talked to the attorney who said, no, but heck no. Sure. that isn't going to be legal. And so we ended up with a DEC order that had to do with a lot of things, but the result was that we needed money. And we couldn't borrow any because we didn't have any revenue stream. So I went to the attorney 6-7 months ago and said, well, what if? And his immediate response wasn't overwhelmingly positive. So we talked about it. More research was done. And ultimately, we ended up to where we were last night. with the idea that this would be a vehicle to get cause or pay involved. That,
for certain, the sewer and water system specifically.
Right. And it and we could have, according to the attorney, have done this at the assembly seat. There was no way I was going to go down that path. I want the voters to weigh in on this. But I think it's a terrific solution for what has been a long, long-running problem.
Sure. So to give a little bit more background, it's probably been over 10 years at this point that the sewer and water system has been operating in the red. Whenever the arsenic treatment plant got put in is when that problem really started on the financial side. And then, of course, in recent years, regular KTNA listeners will know that the sewer lagoon has had a number of problems, improving at this point, but that the DEC did get involved with numbers that were out of compliance as far as the sewer lagoon's permit. And so there's still closed-door meetings going on between the borough and DEC as far as what that's actually going to end up costing the system and what corrective steps might need to be taken. And there's a big range of possibilities as far as how that might turn out.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've got it spot on. And of course, the arsenic, you were okay. Clinton, during his presidency, had a layered approach to getting that dropped, and when that happened, there was $100,000. When it hit the final step, there was $100,000 loan to the Water and Sewer District to get in compliance. But yes, this will, if passed, allow for a revenue stream that can then support bond sales, loans, real vehicles to pay for this.
Well, and presumably build up some sort of capital reserve.
Yes,
because that's going to be an issue. The system's 30 years old at this point. It's only a matter of time before you have just breakdowns that are going to be due to the age of the system.
That time has arrived, Philip.
Okay.
So no, this will get us. My dream for this, if I can share that with you, is that it gets passed. We institute the 3% sales tax. We get a process in debt being repaid. We get, and not necessarily in this order, but that we get the money we need to get help us get into compliance and whatever order we end up having to agree with DEC. Then I want to look at the rates, if there's an opportunity to reduce those because of the revenue stream. I want to look at that. And then ultimately, and I checked with the attorney on this, but ultimately, if we're receiving more money than we can reasonably use, I would like to see us then be able to drop that back to 2 for as long as that worked for us.
Okay.
So within that structure, we can do the things that I've just described.
So I want to come back to that in just a second, but first I want to give out the phone number again. If anybody wants to join our conversation, 733-1200, or send us an email, dj@ktna.org. So I want to bring up the 3% and the potential to step it down, because when this was still an idea in its formation, there was an indeterminate percentage. It was going to be relatively low. So why not at this point start at 1.5% or 2%, and then if needed, move up to 3%?
Because the needs are currently known needs are in the millions of dollars, and we're not going to get there as quickly, even if we could limp along with that way. So I wanted to attack this thing on the front end and move in a method where we were, if this is a hardship or pain to anyone, that we're relieving and removing that rather than here you go, another step, here you go, another step. And it's not even in a, you know, I guess if you were a real true politician, you would be talking about the viability of all of that in the political universe. That isn't my motivation. My motivation is that I want to address in a meaningful way what we're doing. And I think, I'm speculating here, but I think if we share the news with the folks at DEC of what we're doing, is probably going to have a positive impact.
Well, because I'm sure they're very aware of of the system's revenue stream issues.
yeah, which is why we can't get any loans. And yeah, yes, they are.
So, I mean, kind of the root of that problem is that you've got a sewer and water system that was built in the mid to late 80s. And since then, there's been no growth in the user base. It's under 200 people. I want to say it's 190 and change at this point.
Yeah, it's just under 200, and I don't know the exact number either.
And so, but I mean, I saw some comments recently by the Public Works Director that said, and it kind of echoes what I've heard locally here, that the user base really just in user fees cannot afford to keep this system the way it needs to be.
Exactly. And hasn't for some time.
And I think a lot of locals agree with that, I guess. And so you've already kind of gone into why the bed tax hasn't been used, and the borough attorney is steadfast in his belief that tax money cannot be put toward that. And so at that point, when it comes to special service areas, like one of the things I've explained this a fair bit, but it is a bit of an oddity, this idea of a special service area, but that's the way that the system is set up. And so the way that taxes can be levied and that money can be distributed to the system is pretty constrained overall, as far as you can't take an area-wide tax like the bed tax and apply it to a service area.
Precisely.
And so this sales tax, though, so it would be – it's not – the only delineation for where the sales tax would apply is the actual sewer and water district then, because that's...
Yes, and I don't want to get way out ahead of myself and create chaos and confusion, but my hope would be, I know that community restrooms here have been a problem. And,
very true.
my sense is that if the sewer and water district invested in some community public restrooms, that could be dealt into this equation too. And I haven't clarified this, so folks, if you're listening to this, please don't go anywhere with it. But my vision, as I've had a lot of time to think about this, is that would be my hope, that could be another thing that would be addressed under this, because that money can only be spent in the Talkeetna Sewer and Water District. So before I drop back to two, I want to make sure that we've checked off everything that I hope to accomplish and that the community needs for me to accomplish with this money.
So from a legal perspective, I'm glad you brought that up, because just like area-wide taxes and non-area-wide taxes and any other tax cannot be applied to funding the system, the inverse is also true in that any tax levied specifically for the system cannot legally be spent anywhere else. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. You cannot take your RSA money and spend it in Willow.
Right.
I mean, it's that money for that area. And so, yeah, it's some interesting law, which is one of the reasons when I first approached the borough attorney, we had a lot of discussion. He did a lot of research. And that was one of the things, because we're kind of embarking on new territory here.
Well, and I mean, the whole idea of service areas and special service areas, when I moved to Alaska, that was kind of a unique thing to me. I kind of learned about that after I moved up here, because it was the reason they were created was to fill these kind of uniquely Alaskan scenarios.
It was where the original folks, the constitutional folks, recognized that not everywhere was going to have a city.
Right.
And so what can we do for those people? And of course, the rest is history. And we have this checkerboard RSA thing, checkerboard FSA things. And now we have the Talkeetna.
And now the borough is running a utility. Well, I say now, has been for 30 years.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we won't, when we're talking about cities and small areas, we won't get into the I word.
Oh, you don't want to talk about incorporation?
Yeah. Well, it seems to be kind of a running theme. The last couple of mayors now have in various... to various degrees suggested that Talkeetna incorporate.
but none of them were smiling when they said it, right?
Well, I'm pretty sure the mayor before the current mayor was.
Ah, okay.
So, all right. Well, we are at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with the second half of Sioux Valley Voice. If you want to join the conversation, the number to call, 733-1200, or you can send us an email, dj@ktna.org, with any questions you have for Mat-Su Borough Assemblymember Randall Kowalke. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Listening to Sioux Valley Voice on Sioux Valley Voice on KTNA 88.9 FM, Talkeetna. My name is Philip Manning. I'm here with Mat-Su Borough Assemblymember Randall Kowalke, and we've been discussing a number of issues facing the borough and the Upper Valley. And just before the break, we were talking about the proposal for a sales tax that's going to be put before voters on October 3rd, I believe, is the date. And so kind of getting into the details of that and how that's going to work. And there's some more stuff to get into as it comes to that. So what is going to be subject to the sales tax?
There is a long laundry list that I haven't committed to memory. And I checked this morning with the borough clerk in case this question come up. This ordinance is on the borough website. It is the introduced ordinance. There was one change to that, and I can get into that in a minute. But all of the items that are exempt and all the items that are taxable are in this 14 or 15 pages of
it's
ordinance.
Lengthy.
And they're laid out there. But if the questions are sightseeing flights, yes. Are river tours, yes. Our hamburgers at Twister, yes. Things that aren't, if there were an apothecary or a pharmacy here, those items wouldn't be taxed. And this, as I'm probably repeating myself, but this was modeled after the city of Wasilla's sales tax. This was a template, things that should be excluded, things mm-hmm. that weren't excluded.
So one thing, so I looked this up for personal reasons, but like long-term rent, like people who are renting a place downtown, that's not subject based on what I read.
Correct. You're right.
Okay.
It's not.
And I know that's going to impact potentially quite a few people living downtown. So we do have a call on the line, so I want to get to that real quick. So let's see. Do we have Willie? Are you there?
I am.
All right, Willie, what's your question for Assemblymember Kowalke?
Well, I actually have two questions, and one is a very simple question that's probably easily answered, and I'm displaying my own ignorance here. I actually live outside of the Talkeetna service area, just outside, and I haven't really followed a lot of these things very closely, and everybody just starts pandering about these numbers like the cap rate of 10.33 or whatever. Number one, what exactly does that number refer to? Because I never hear anybody explaining it.
Oh, the mill rate.
It's exactly the mill rate. So when you get your tax bill, you'll have the general area-wide mill rate, which will now be, it'll show up as 10.3233. Then you'll have your fire service area of, 2 point, 3 point, whatever that is for your area, your road service area. Those will be broken down on the card you get. But your base area-wide tax will be this 10.3233 number.
Okay, and that refers to, again, break it down one more time exactly.
So what the mill rate is?
Yes.
So the mill rate refers to property taxes, so it's the rate per thousand. Like, one mill is $1 of tax per $1,000 of property value, if
okay.
I'm not mistaken.
Right. And the only reason I'm having you do that is because if I'm not clear on that, there's probably some other people that aren't super clear on that either. So the other a little more complex question, and I expect that there's probably a lot of organizational problems with doing something like this, but we're talking about so many services, particularly in Talkeetna and also in the borough at large, being consumed by summer visitors. And I know in the work that I've done in fire department, and I see a lot of the ambulance services and how many calls we get to a lot of these like fancy princess hotels and everything, it's a lot of resources that has to be used for all of this. Has anybody ever considered doing things such as instituting perhaps a seasonal sales tax? So you institute it during the summer visitor season and you take it off during the winter for residents that are here.
Yeah. Yeah, we had I talked with the chamber folks, I talked with the community council folks, the water and sewer folks, and that was one of the things during the pioneer days on this thing that we discussed, but there was enough interest, particularly the chamber, we're talking about their Taste of Talkeetna, the bachelor event, a number of other winter events that would be missing a lot of this opportunity to tax the tourists. The other thing was when you start turning on or turning off a tax, you get higher administrative costs. And so when the smoke cleared, we decided that for a number of reasons to leave it as a year-round tax here within our district. Now, what you're talking about at the Princess, of course, that the Princess doesn't fall into the Talkeetna Sewer and Water area.
Right, because they're up in Trapper Creek, essentially.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that was kind of a separate issue. I mean, I know there's a lot of discussions. You were talking briefly about Department of Emergency Services funding a while back, and I just working from the inside, I see how much of this kind of, in totally apart from Talkeetna, can sometimes be spent by visitors to the area that, expect emergency services or other kinds of services. But,
right.
Well, I appreciate that answer. That definitely clarified some things. Mm-hmm. And it's always a thorny subject when you start talking about figuring out how to pay for things that need to be done and talking about the T word here in Alaska.
Yeah, the T word is almost as nasty in this part of the woods as the I word, as it turns out.
Yeah, well, and regarding the ambulance service, my understanding is that if you call an ambulance, you get a bill. So, I don't know how we collect from the tourists, or I haven't gotten into DES's business on that front, but I would hope we are, in fact, billing these folks.
So.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that works either because I'm not involved in that end of it, but there certainly is a lot of expenditure and a lot of need there.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your call, Willie, and your questions, and I'm really glad you brought up the mill rate point because it's one of those things that I go through kind of in my day-to-day, and I'm sure Assemblymember Kowalki does even more than I do, but it is good to kind of clarify what exactly we mean when we talk about these property tax rates.
All right, and thanks, you guys. This is a great community outreach program on the radio. Thanks.
Well, thanks, Willie.
Bye.
Bye. All right. So if you have a question for Assemblymember Kowalki, the number to call is 733-1200, or you can send us an email, dj@ktna.org. We did get a question via email that we'll get into in just a minute, but I want to make sure that we've worked all the way through this this sales tax question. So it's going to be on the ballot October 3rd, and the proposal as it stands is for a 3% sales tax inside the sewer and water district, which I'm always a little bit fuzzy on where how far that actually extends. I think it goes out past the latitude, maybe like Susitna River Lodge is about the extent of the sewer and water system.
That's my understanding as well. I haven't studied the map in enough detail to be able to delineate it for you. But yes, it was it caught the area that is connected to sewer and water, so most everybody knows where that is, and there's a boundary outside of that that encompasses that area.
Okay. So downtown and East Talkeetna, so it would hit the airport.
Yes.
And I think it stops just shy of the tracks, if memory serves, as you're going out the Talkeetna Spur out of town. So folks that have, some folks that have lodgings out of town who were like, well, is this going to impact us? And so it's just basically downtown and East Talkeetna. And like you said, so the assembly could have passed that tax last night without putting it on the ballot.
Correct. That's the borough attorney said we could have done that. And for an assortment of reasons, we opted not to it, not the least of which was I wanted the citizens to understand what was happening, to see it, vote on it, and express their opinion.
All right. So, one of the other things about that is, so a few years ago, there was kind of a plan laid out for getting the sewer and water system based on increased user fees back into the black, at least operationally speaking. But there was no provision in there for any kind of reserve fund, any kind of capital funding. And this was before DEC got involved, before you were elected. But and so now this would potentially resolve all that. And you've said that your hope is that it could eventually lower people's sewer and water bills.
That is my hope. Hope, and in my long-term wishful thinking, is maybe even help address the community public restroom issue.
Sure.
Put reserve monies away for maintenance. The plan that you're referring to, and again, I came in after it, but was to try to get as much money coming in as it was going out every day. And of course, that works until you need a tune-up or you have to replace the muffler, and then you're toast.
Exactly.
So that's what we're doing.
All right. So we did get a question in via email, and we can certainly go back to the sales tax or the sewer and water system. Though actually, before I get to this, so at this point, the sewer and water system has begun discharging again for the summer season. It's on a seasonal 6-month permit, and I heard from Public Works Director Terry Dolan that the first round of testing has not come back yet. And so we don't know what those numbers are, but those numbers that got DEC involved in the first place, fecal coliform, dissolved oxygen, et cetera, those numbers did improve over the last year, but we won't know what the initial numbers for this year are for a few more weeks, at least according to Director Dolan. So
if I can jump in a second, Philip, on this, and of course you know, as somebody who isn't involved with this, my question will be, well, what's wrong with you guys? How come you can't get this fixed? And I think 30 days is plenty of time. And I would agree with that, except that this plant works, and it's about as complicated as an anvil.
Yeah.
If you do what you're supposed to do, it should work fine. Part of this whole solution is a holding period of from 270 to like 330 days, depending on, and that's why the infiltration is such a big issue, which I can talk about too. But so once you're out of compliance, it's in the pipeline. So time goes on, you do these improvements, you get rid of the weed on top, you aerate, you do some other things, and you can get yourself back into compliance. But it's not an on-off switch.
Right.
And I think that's important for people.
Takes the better part of a year, at least.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, no, and that's I'm glad you brought that up, because that's another one of those things that I see every see day in, day out, but probably don't elucidate enough for the listeners. So we do have a question from Laura on a different topic. She said her concern is public access to the riverfront at the end of Main Street. There is borough land there. There's a platted borough street, A Street, which is now mostly underwater, but there is still platted dry land there, and is usually under small and large puddles, the pathway to it. Over the years, the Talkeetna Council has repeatedly tried to solve the problem by working with the borough, but no luck. We have a fantastic view of the river and mountains, and most people cannot walk there easily without a lot of rock hopping. How can this be solved? And I can attest to that, that what she's saying is true, that, I mean, I'm fairly young and spry, but getting down to the riverfront isn't always easy, and there's actually a committee now of the community council to solve this, or to try to address the safe riverfront access. But do you see any sort of solution there on how we can get easier access to the riverfront at the end of Main Street?
The short answer is no. and in way of explanation, I've been down there. I've walked that. In fact, I was down here with the Corps of Engineers, and I've walked a great deal of that with the Corps folks as we looked at the revetment, and hope we're working on getting some flood control money. That road, I don't know. Again, I would have to talk to Public Works and find out what the status is. I'm assuming, and I know what happens when you do that, but that if there was a way in a quick fix, that Terry Dolan and his people would do that. So whether that road is in the RSA, and whether it's RSA money that needs to go to fill and fix and all the permitting and whatever else needs to be done, I'm speculating here, but I don't think this is, jump up and send a crew up here to repair this. I don't think it's in that realm. I'll certainly go back and ask some more questions. This had come up at another point during another discussion that I was tangentially related to. I made a mental note of it. Haven't had the opportunity, nor have I actually followed up on it. But my guess is that wherever the RSA overlaps, and if that area is in it, it's going to be in our ballpark. Their mill rate increased, I think, a tenth during the last budget period.
Yeah, there was a small increase, yeah.
I know they're operating on a shoestring, so I think I can find out more, but my suspicion is that that's the answer to that question.
So, yeah, one, and I know this will shock you, but it's a complicated issue in Talkeetna, as with so many other things. But no, apparently there is actually, well, what used to be A Street is now mostly under the river, but there actually is still part of it that's still dry land. It's covered in sand and rocks right now, but it's still technically a borough road.
And again, if it's a borough road within an RSA, and we're in river water, I think the beginning of permits that would be needed from DNR on and on and on and on and on would be quite a laundry list.
All right. Well, and then there's also the fact that between where that borough land and where Main Street ends, also a borough road, but I mean, there's a significant amount of railroad property there too. But before we get too deep into that, I want to give folks one more opportunity to call in. We've got just over 10 minutes left in the show, but definitely time. If you have a question for Assemblymember Kowalki, the number to call 733-1200, or you can send us an email, dj@ktna.org. And I bring up the railroad property down there at the riverfront for a specific reason, and that's that there's been a lot of discussion here over the last couple months about parking downtown. And there was a proposal for expanded parking that basically would take a lot of the wooded land between the current Chase parking lot and the Trestle Bridge and turn a lot of that into a parking lot. There was pretty strong opposition to that locally. There's been a proposal put forward by the community council that references pretty heavily a development plan from 2004, if I'm not mistaken, that tries to address additional parking, but at the same time tries to preserve a lot of that land. But my impression locally has been that the community council's main interest is for the borough to acquire a management agreement for that large parcel of land between the beginning of the Chase Trail, the Chase Trailhead, and the riverfront. And what can you tell us as far as where that's at? Like, what progress has been made? Because I know there are a lot of proposals that have been floated. So where are we at concretely today?
I'll give you the 30-second. I realize we're running out of time, but Robert Sheldon was at the railroad talking to them about another tourism matter, and they knew that he was associated with Talkeetna and said, "Hey, G, how about some management agreement on some of these land? What do you think?" Robert called me, and I didn't know Robert that well at that point, and said the railroad, you know, is interested in maybe doing that. I called Eric Phillips. Eric Phillips wanted to know if I was using marijuana. I think that's probably the politest way to put it, that he had been trying to wrestle with the railroad for years, and
right.
They didn't want to cooperate on anything. I said, well, please go to a meeting and see what you can find out. He did come back, said, amazing, you were right. So they had wanted to see, as part of this management agreement, what this parking situation was going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
They view the Chase folks as customers.
Sure.
So they didn't want a plan where we moved them to the Talkeetna Spur and that we did some of these other things. So there were a number of ideas floated. Emerson and Eric, others.
Emerson Kruger.
Yeah, Emerson Kruger, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And ultimately, all of them panned. And then late in the game, a couple of local folks, Don Jones for one, and some others, developed a new plan. And the new plan is essentially to clean up the current Chase parking lot, remove the island, and see what spaces they could increase in there, and then go east of the railroad tracks behind the log cabin.
The old coffee shop.
Coffee shop. And that is a railroad lease lot, and the borough is supposed to try to get the railroad lease lot and then to put parking there. And then in order to make all of that work for people to get through, they wanted a railroad crossing, pedestrian crossing, to be provided by, I think, the railroad. The borough can't do that.
Sure, because that's
the money.
Yeah.
And it's theirs. So that is under review.
Okay.
And we don't know what the answers to those questions are. And then that was part of this whole package of getting this other land. My concern is if we find out that we can't solve the parking problem, or if we can get two more parking spots by doing this and that, that it's not going to be cost effective, and that we may miss this whole window. I'm not sure what's going to happen.
Okay. So, but the community's compromise proposal, because last time I talked to Eric Phillips about this, he said, you know, when I asked him about the status and whether the railroad had a hard deadline, his answer to that was no, that there was no hard deadline from the railroad, but that they wanted to see some kind of movement. And so then it became, he said that basically the borough was waiting to see what this compromise proposal was that he thought would get, you know, some traction publicly here in Talkeetna. And then so the plan that you and I have been kind of discussing, that is that compromise plan based on the 2004 development plan.
Well, not exactly. But yeah, I mean, this gets complicated because the 2004 actually had parking places that were done away with when the fence went
around the wellhouse. No, you're right. You're right.
So if we go back to 2004, we really need to add parking places.
Right. And there was a plan for that, but that got obviated due to security concerns and, you know, Department of Homeland Security, that sort of thing. We do have another caller on the line. We have Laura on the line. And Laura, hopefully I articulated your question well enough. But Laura, are you there?
Yeah, great job. Thanks on the Main Street thing. That's all good information. I just want to clarify and perhaps correct what Randall is saying. Don Jones and the Chase Community Council were not late in the game on getting a parking plan together. In fact, the Chase Community Council had worked for years to get a good parking plan going. And at the very first meeting after the council meeting where the Roberts plan or the railroad plan was introduced, at that meeting we put forth the plans that are now being considered. So I just want to correct the timeline on that. And also that the borough has an adopted riverfront plan, which I think is 2003, maybe it is 2004, and that should be followed first before any other plans that of grand parking lots are put in. We need to go to the plans that are adopted by the borough.
Well, thank you for that that correction. As the assemblyman, I've had incoming from numerous individuals and organizations, and frankly, lost track of who was on first as far as what group, because we had, for instance, the chamber supported some of the original plans, and then they changed their view. And so there were a lot of moving pieces here. And so thank you for the correction.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for your call, Laura. We've got just a few minutes left. And I was at the first parking lot meeting because the community council did set up a parking lot committee. And I was at that first meeting. And there was, I think, the kind of the overwhelming feeling from the folks there, whether they be from Talkeetna, from Chase, was that all of a sudden, like there had been no movement on this plan, and then all of a sudden there was this sense of urgency, and I think that's what caught a lot of people. Well, I don't think they said it very explicitly that's what caught a lot of people off guard and kind of put them on the defensive in a lot of cases, because it's like, oh, where did this come from? We've got a plan.
Yeah, and if Laura or others have better information than I do, please voice that. But my understanding was that originally when Eric met with the railroad, they wanted kind of our decision by March, I think. And so I dug a little deeper. The railroad's going through contraction. Layoffs were involved.
Sure.
There were people in place, and they wanted to, if we're going to put all these pieces together in this deal, then they wanted to get it addressed. So that was all I know. I didn't care what the timeline looked like, but I was following what I believed was the required timeline.
All right. Well, we've got just a couple of minutes left, so I want to give you an opportunity, if there's any sort of parting messages for today that you want to give to the listeners here in the Upper Valley, anything that they might be, you know, expecting down the pike or
I'm excited about the potential that we have, particularly with solving the revenue stream for the Water and Sewer District. The parking thing continues to be being reviewed by a lot of folks. I think those have been issues that were brought up to me as a candidate in the year that I ran, and I would hope that I can bring some progress to either one of those.
And as you've mentioned, just like there have been many assembly members who have dealt with the sewer and water funding system, I can name at least three of my predecessors here as news director at KTNA who have also been covering the same issue for at least as long. So I can sympathize a fair bit with you on that one. So that is just about all the time we have today on the show. You have been listening to Sioux Valley Voice. My guest today has been Mat-Sue Borough Assemblymember Randall Kowalke. If you miss part of the show or want to listen again, the Sioux Valley Voice will rebroadcast tonight at 7, or you can listen online anytime at ktna.org. I'm Philip Manning. Thanks for listening.